Oh. The sounds had jerked him back into wakefulness, dimly heard through the closed sec door. He could sense the animatronic creature lying on its side, useless legs trailed behind it. Its crimson eyes would be staring blankly at the cold steel, the relays and contacts puzzling at the problem. It had trailed him through the redoubt, hunting him down to this place, this dead-end room, with nowhere to go but out. Experimentally, Ryan tapped on the door with the haft of the panga, wincing at the instant retaliation. Ryan sat again. The hammering was unbelievably fast. After a couple of minutes, the pounding seemed to come from inside Ryan's skull.
Shut the fuck up.
On impulse, he started to count the frequency of the blows, using his cron to check them. The droid was pounding so fast that it wasn't possible to keep anything like an accurate count. But the number in a single minute was certainly over 500. Ryan sat and tried to use one of the relaxation techniques that Christie had taught him, skills she'd inherited from Mother Sonia back in Harmonyville. It involved sitting cross-legged, hands laid palms upward on the thighs. Ryan did that, then lowered his head and closed his eye, taking very slow, deep breaths, holding them for a comfortable time, and then releasing them equally slowly. He was supposed to be chanting some hypnotic, repetitive phrase as well, but he'd always found that part difficult. It made him feel like a stoop. Several minutes passed, but Ryan found the clattering so intrusive that he just couldn't concentrate on properly relaxing. He counted again. Just below 500. The next time he counted, it was around 450, audibly slower than before. The droids had to be powered by some kind of battery, and he guessed that they were too small to carry self-sufficient nuke packs. There were small panels on its chest that could be linked to a solar pack, but in the dark passages of the redoubt, it wasn't likely to be much recharged.
Running down, I guess.
He looked again at his small cron, waiting for it to reach the end of a minute. And he started to count.
390.
In minutes, the rate dropped away until it was below 200, around 3 hammer blows per second. Ryan had moved away from the door, looking at the 3 surviving androids, taking care not to step inside the warning line. It crossed his mind to try to incapacitate them where they stood, hack out the wiring controls inside the knee and elbow joints. But to do that, he'd have to get in real close, over the danger mark, risking triggering all of them at once. It was a risk he didn't feel much like taking. Not yet.
65.
An hour had drifted by. Now the noise was definitely weaker, as well as much less frequent. Ryan got up and strode briskly around the room, singing quietly to himself. It was something that Doc had taught him, claiming it was one of his own personal favorites. By the time Ryan returned again to stand by the door, the metallic thumping had slowed down considerably.
17.
The impact now was so feeble that the droid's hammer fist seemed to be barely making contact with the sec door.
Only 12.
Finally, it stopped. Ryan stood by the door for several minutes, straining to hear. He opened it an inch, ready to throw all his weight against it at any sign of robotic life. But the droid was dead. It lay with its head near the sec steel, one arm resting against it. The hammer was pounded flat, the end of the arm bent and warped. Its eyes were dead and insensate, with not even the barest glimmer of a red light within. The door shut again, and Ryan walked slowly toward the remaining trio of sec hunters. His hand rested on the butt of the blaster, ready in case one of them suddenly became activated. But all stood motionless, lifeless. Ryan smiled as he stood just on the safe side of the red line on the floor. He reached up and gave the finger to the nearest droid.
Fuck you all.
And as though he triggered a switch, tiny rubies glowed in the staring eyes. The red light in the blank eyes of the android flickered, then went out. There was a terrible stench of burning rubber and melting plastic, and thick black smoke began to pour from somewhere deep in the chest controls. A trickle of dark green liquid started to ooze stickily across where the Sek Hunter's genitals would have been if it had any. Ryan allowed his hand to relax off the butt of the Sek Sauer. The droid's metal lips parted, and its teeth began to grind down, sparks flying, and shards of silver metal pattering on the floor. First one leg lifted, the sharp claws extending. Then it came down again on the same spot. An action was repeated by the other leg. The arms remained still, hanging uselessly at the droid's sides, the knives and pincers motionless. A throbbing vibration made the Sek Hunter quiver. When it became stronger, Ryan stepped well away. The droid rocked from side to side, then fell to the floor. Thicker smoke billowed, and the Sek Hunter lay still, finally dead. Ryan had already reached the conclusion that the five androids were somehow linked together. They only acted against him one at a time, the next one powering up only after the demise of its predecessor. But Ryan had no idea how that worked, nor what kind of time interval was involved.
Three aces on the line, two to come.
After a watchful hour, Ryan had decided that the finite malfunction of the third Sek Hunter had broken the chain of death. There wasn't any sign of activity from the remaining pair of droids, though he'd gone and snapped his fingers at them, shouted and waved his hands, being careful not to cross that ancient red line. There was no point in pushing his luck too far. Ryan was feeling desperately tired, and this was as good a place to sleep as any. He took the extra precaution of unlooping some of the cable from the dead droid, casting it carefully around the legs of the other pair of Sek Hunters, and knotting it loosely, so that if either of them moved, they'd inevitably shift the charred metal corpse of their fellow. Having done that, Ryan went to a far corner of the room and fell asleep. When he brought himself awake, it was 4:10 in the morning. He urinated against the wall, seeing how it steamed in the cold, floodlit air. Neither of the androids had moved, and their eyes remained as blank as ice. The journey toward fresh air was endless and wearisome. Ryan trudged along, wishing that he had someone for company. As a younger man, he'd spent most of his time alone. He'd chosen that and lived contentedly with it. But he'd then ridden with a trader for many years, enjoying the friendship of good, trusted companions. And for many months there'd been Christy, JB, and Doc. Most recent of all, he'd begun to relish his lost son, Dean.
Lost and found, and fucking lost again.
The early morning was so cold it came like a slap across the face. Ryan wrapped the white silk scarf more tightly over his mouth and nose, pushing the gloves as far up his wrists as they'd go. The wind had veered during the night, and Ryan could now catch the smell of sulfur, bitter at the back of his throat. It looked like the mine was working a multiple shift system. He could see lights down there, and small trucks rattling along narrow gauge rails. There was a line of figures marching together, tools glinting on their shoulders. Ryan wondered whether one of them might be Dean. There was enough light from the moon, half hidden behind ragged clouds, for him to understand the general shape of the canyon. Now he could make out a number of spidery thin trails that cut across the flanks of the cliffs, with dozens of dark holes that he guessed must be old diggings. There was so much activity by the meandering river, but Ryan began to have doubts about getting in that way. His eye followed the roadway down from the ruins of the redoubt, locating a narrow path that dove off it to the right. It seemed to circle completely around above the main workings, joining the maze of other tracks on the far side of the valley. From there, it might be possible to infiltrate one of the work parties not far below. The old tarmac was slick with patches of ice, and there was a faint mist of powdery snow falling around Ryan, dusting the shoulders of his coat. There had been the momentary concern that Zemyanyan might have guards out, ranging them into the mountains around the mine. But common sense said that he'd have some sentries close in to keep the workers from escaping. In such an isolated position, it wasn't likely that there would be anyone wanting to get into the sulfur workings. As he picked his way lower, Ryan was able for the first time to hear the sounds of the mines. The trail forked about 300 feet above the river at the valley's bottom. The main blacktop carried on down, but a faint track led off to the right, just where Ryan had spotted it from above. Here, the going was harder and more treacherous, the footing unreliable. Twice he found pockets of deeper snow, crumbling and dangerous. He tried to work his way across the first and ended throwing himself flat, arms and legs spread, clinging desperately for purchase to a spur of jagged rock.